two of the planes flying on our wing got direct hits. I mean, I just eaten breakfast with the guys a couple hours ahead of time. Just a big ball of flame. I can tell you about that sometime.
When you first went over then, you went over as a co-pilot or
yes.
a pilot?
I was fresh out of flying school. They sent me up to Utah and put me in a crew. My pilot had just... He was just like me, except he went through training in B-17s. And he didn't have too much time in. And so we flew across the Atlantic and made it.
Well, did you stay a co-pilot for the remaining of your tour?
Yes.
But at that time, they've been losing a lot of pilots also?
Well, I think one of the... The Ploieste oil fields, they lost a lot of planes at one raid. But in Berlin, I wasn't on this raid, but we lost 60 B-17s on one flight over Berlin. Now, that's 600 guys. So they were in need of pilots. And when I went up with a checkoff pilot, luckily I could grease it in, so he gave me a crew.
How many flights did you have to do for your checkoff rides?
I had three landings and three takeoffs, and that was it.
How did you feel about that? Did that feel like you were
Well,
confident?
The worst part was my first combat takeoff was at night, and I'd never made a night takeoff. I'd never made a takeoff with a load of bombs or a crew. So my first combat takeoff was at night with a crew and a load of bombs.
Was the crew aware of this?
Yes, and they were scared. What could they do?
Did they applaud when you got it in the air?
No.
And you were about to tell us about one of the worst missions that you had in over Munich.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't that on tape?
First, just the beginning where you talked about where you were going in and the Germans were, they knew you were coming.
Yeah.
Did you want to elaborate some more on that one?
On Munich?
Yeah.
Well, that was the one where we really got shot up. So I could start on that one. I would say start on that. Then they sent us on rest leave up to Scotland for a week. So we got back home and we started on our missions again, but that was kind of nice.
Well, did that mission over Munich have a tremendous effect on everybody that was on it?
Yes.
Did it affect them the rest of their flights?
Oh, I don't know. We had, as I said, we had three guys hit with flak. They survived, but we had two internal fires on the plane and one on an engine. A hunk of flak went through the propeller hub, so the oil came out and went all over the engine and started a fire. Well, there wasn't a whole lot of oil that came out, so it just blew itself out. But anyway, we were able to feather that engine. And then another engine was getting low on oil pressure, and that went out just before we landed. So actually, we came in on two engines. Three guys hit by flak. Oh, that's where we had our oxygen system shot out, and two fires on the plane. And one of the fires, it was a rubber hose burning that had oxygen in it. So we got the bright idea to pinch the hose, and the fire went out. So, you know, at altitude, all that's happening at once, it was kind of tough.
I imagine. Was that the only time you were over Munich also?
No, that was our third mission in 3 days. Why they kept sending us there, I don't know. We flew right after that happened, we flew right next to Switzerland where those clouds of peaks came through the peaks of the mountains came through the clouds. And boy, we thought quite a bit about landing there, but if you can get home, they're going to court-martial you if you land, you know, on a neutral place like that. In other words, we could sit out the war there. But we were warned if we can get back to the base, we better get back to the base.
Well, did you have emergency landing fields in mind, though, if something happened during the mission?
In England, yes. They had, we could radio ahead, and they could direct us to fields on the coast. We were maybe 100, 150 miles in from the coast.
Are there other stories that you would want to tell us about your missions themselves? Or?
Well, this one mission where two planes blew up right on our wing, that was really something. I looked over and saw them blow up, and then our engineer in the upper turret saw it. And he got out of the turret. We couldn't get him back into the turret. He just, I don't know what happened. We landed, and he stuttered so much he couldn't even talk. I never saw him again. I don't know what happened to him. He never went on another mission.
Could the crew members or the pilots, if they had become so distressed, just say, "I can't do this anymore"?
I never heard them really say that. They knew they were supposed to be at their position for the benefit of the rest of the crew. I never heard them say that.
So there was enough sense of being part of the team.
That's right.
Not to let it down.
I mean, we trained for 3 months together, and that was part of the training.
Well, after this was over and you came back, how long were you still on active duty? What was demobilization like?
Oh, I came back in September of 43, and they gave me a 10-day leave. And then they sent my wife and me to Miami to the classification center. They put us up in a nice hotel, and we went deep sea fishing on a big army scow. And I happened to be sitting in the back of the thing hanging onto the line when a sailfish hit. 6-foot sailfish, and I got a picture of my wife and I standing next to that sailfish with a certificate from the Chamber of Commerce saying that I caught it, and I got that yet. That's about the only time I really went fishing.
When you came back from experiences like this and had to be around people who had not had them, was that much of an adjustment?
No. I'm just happy to get back. They put me on a four-engine C-54, and I came back with fighter pilots that had completed their missions. And I got to talk to them. Like, one fighter pilot said they would accompany us for maybe 20 minutes, and then they'd have to go back. And they would say what they called hitting the deck. They'd go down low and they'd shoot anything in sight. This one fighter pilot said he saw a farmer plowing with his horses, and he gave the horses a squirt. And he looked back and the farmer was holding his fist up in the air. I didn't think much of that.
Were you in for how long?
I was only in for 3 years.
But after getting back, how long did it take to get demobilized completely? Because I always thought there was a series of criteria for who was going to be demobilized after the war.
Well, the guys that had been fighting overseas got out first. Let's see. One thing I wanted to tell you, at the classification center in Miami, they asked me where I'd like to be stationed, and I said the Northwest, so I'd be closer to my home in Minneapolis. So they sent me to Sebring, Florida.
Hmm.
Anyway, I went through instructor school. I was an instructor in B-17s. And what they were doing, they used a B-17 as a training plane for twin-engine pilots. And I had twin-engine pilots with high time. We're giving them four-engine time so they could go up to B-29s. In other words, the B-17 was a trainer. So I instructed till the war was over. And when Japan surrendered, they sent me up to Camp McCoy, Wisconsin, and I was out of the service in weeks. There wasn't any messing around.
Did you continue to fly after
your discharge? I was in a flying club, Cessna 172 four-engine plane, and I hate to tell you what it cost to fly then. I flew that plane for $7.50 an hour wet with gas. That same plane without the gas had cost you at least $75 to $85 an hour. That's how flying's gone up.
How long did you continue to fly?
I flew until about, 1978, right in there. I'm in this experimental airplane club. We got about 40 members here in Fernandina Beach. They're building a hangar for us now, and we're going to build a club plane for it'll be a two-place plane, and we're going to get a kit, build a plane.
Do you have a lot of members in that who flew in World War II?
No. I'm one of the older guys.
Well, did you keep in touch with any of the people you were overseas with?
I contacted fellows in my crew, and they gradually died off. And the tail gunner came down to see me. I went up to Wisconsin to see him. We send Christmas cards all the time. But we're the only ones left. Those guys all smoked and drank, and I didn't smoke or drink. I think that's a good testimony to smoking and drinking.
What did you do after the war?
My dad was in a business of his own, mainly maintenance on elevated water tanks in Minnesota. And I went into that business, and I was in it for 25 years. Then I went into sales. But you can imagine working on elevated water tanks in Minnesota in the wintertime. We would go down to Oklahoma and work. But I did that for 25 years. We even built some. Then one of my buddies, he was working for W.R. Grace Company, the Zone Light Division. He got a promotion to sales manager, and he asked me to try out for a sales job. So I was in sales for the last 19 years.
What brought you to Amelia Island?
My wife's sister was married to the Methodist preacher here, Jim Powell. And one October in 1980, my wife and I were looking out of the window at our first wet snowfall, and she said, "Let's get out of here." I mean, our kids were gone. So she called up her sister in Fernandina. Her sister said, "Come on down." She said, "I'll get a condo for you." She rented a condo at Fernandina Shores, furnished for $350 a month. I mean, that was nice. It was a 5-foot-wide stairway, all carpeted. $350 a month. So we rented that for 3 winters, then finally we came down here and bought a house.
Well, when you got out of the Army Air Corps, you were a captain.
Yes.
Did you consider staying in the reserves? Or?
Well, I did, because just before the war ended, they'd only let us get in 4 hours flying a month to get our flight pay. And all the officers had to sign in at the officers' club for these officer parties. And everything was around the bar. And I didn't want that lifestyle for my family. I just wanted to get out of the Army. Mm-hmm.
Were there any other things you'd like to share with us? Stories that we might not have touched on?
I don't know. Well, those two flights I told you about were the most dangerous, although we would come back with holes in our ship. As I said before, I flew 12 different B-17s. And a lot of times we'd get them home, but they were just junk. They'd maybe take the engine off and put on another B-17. So I flew 12 different B-17s, which is, you divide 12 into 35, and they didn't last three missions. And we had half our crew with Purple Hearts. That's about all that I know of.
How many missions did you fly?
35.
35, and that was the requirement?
Yes, and they sent me home. The enlisted men only flew 30, but the officers flew 35, I think, because of all of the cost of our training or something.
Were most of your missions ended over German targets or over French targets?
France and Germany. Well, Holland, too.
Holland, all right.
My last mission was over in Nijmegen, Holland. We bombed out some flak gunners so that they had these gliders coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So we bombed out the flak gunners. That was my last mission.
Did you get to meet anybody of importance, like Jimmy Doolittle or...
I really never got to meet any, but I saw Jimmy Doolittle. He was up on in a P-38.
Mm-hmm.
They had equipped a P-38 so with a Norden bomb sight, put a bombardier in it, and the other P-38s would fly formation on them. And when they saw him toggle his bombs off, they used them as bombers.
How about you mentioned earlier in the beginning about Jimmy Stewart in the, I guess you'd seen him in like a war advertisement.
Yes.
Did you get to, was he over there at the same time you were? And did you get to maybe see him as well?
He was over there when I was, but I never got to see him. We had 25 heavy bomber bases in England. 25. Just, I'm talking about heavy bombers.
Mm-hmm.
B-24s and B-17s.
Very well.
We had a few entertainers come over, and one I saw was Dinah Shore.
Uh-huh.
She came to our hangar, and the guys all loved her.
Did you ever see Glenn Miller?
No, but he went down over the channel when I was there. I think his plane just spun in or something. They never heard from him again.
Uh-huh.
He sure played good music.
Could you tell us any about, did you receive the Distinguished Flying Cross?
Yes.
Or Air Medal?
I had the Air Medal with a couple of clusters and the DFC, yeah.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Lang, thank you very much for sharing your recollections with all of us here at the museum. And this concludes the interview of Charles B. Lane. Thank you.
Well, I hope I gave you a little information on yourself.
Yeah.